Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. 208 in the morning. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here in the historic Tribune Tower on the Magnificent Mile. Jess Raines is behind the glass producing. She'll answer the phone when you dial 312-981-7200. You can also text to us at that number. Again, 312-981-7200. It's been a very busy night in the newsroom for Roger Badish, who's upstairs in the seventh floor. Hey, Roger, how are you?
Yeah, well, hi. Good morning there, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. We've got a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
Late Friday night, early Saturday morning in Syria, missile strikes in retaliation for last week's chemical attack.
Right.
If this hadn't happened, we'd still be talking about it tonight because so much had led up to this with President Trump's threatening tweets and Russia's threatening tweets. But we went ahead and he spoke to the nation around what time last night? So I missed it when it was live. I think I was already, it was like 7:35, 7:55.
Yeah, about 7:30. Yeah, it was right after 7:30, I believe. I was home at the time, but I had the radio on, so as I was getting ready to come in. But, yeah, it happened about right around 7:30.
From the New York Times, the U.S. and European allies launched airstrikes on Friday night against Syrian research, storage, and military targets as President Trump sought to punish President Bashar al-Assad for a suspected chemical attack near Damascus last weekend that killed more than 40 people. Britain and France joined the United States in the strikes in a coordinated operation that was intended to show Western resolve in the face of what the leaders of the three nations called persistent violations of international law. Mr. Trump characterized it as the beginning of a sustained effort to force Mr. Assad to stop using banned weapons, but only ordered a limited one-night operation that hit three targets. I know that on Patty's show with the guys, they were talking earlier tonight about how important it was that Britain and France were involved in this. And I think it does lend a lot of credence to it because President Trump is going through so much here in the U.S. with the investigations that are going on and the attention he keeps drawing to them instead of just letting them play out. And so had we not had any allies involved in this, there'd be a lot of talk about whether this is just, him changing the news cycle. And because I think there is a legitimate question to be asked. You know, I heard the report earlier tonight that basically they're doing double what they did last year as far as this airstrike. And what does this really do? Does this really deter? I know that the New York Times is saying they targeted research, storage, military targets to try to lessen maybe the capabilities they have to use these weapons. But is this really to deter Syria? Is this really going to change anything in Syria? Or is this sending a message to their supporters in Russia and Iran?
Yeah, it's that discussion will continue. I don't think we're ever going to get the answer unless some document or phone call or text or email comes out.
And I don't think there's a smoking gun on that. I think it's more a philosophical, does this airstrike really change anything in Syria?
Right.
Bashar al-Assad is somebody who has done pretty vile things over the years. President Trump has characterized him as an animal, a gas-loving animal, I think he said earlier this week in a tweet. So with a dictator like that, are you really going to change the way they do business if you don't truly make an impact? And this sounds like, while they dropped bombs and they attacked them, did they do enough to really stop them from doing what they want to do over there? And can you do much more without truly getting us into an international conflict with Russia and Iran? And how far do you take that? Is this, what you can do militarily without causing too much problem, but still showing we're not going to put up with this?
Well, personally, pulling myself out from the news person chair, personally, I think that you've got the airstrikes didn't do anything to deter Assad.
Mm-hmm.
You can get machinery to make chemicals anywhere. You can build them in your own factories. You can get the chemicals anywhere. You can manufacture this. Blowing up a manufacturing site is not going to stop somebody who has been accused of doing this on a daily basis. The attacks last week, the alleged attacks last week, apparently have not been the only attacks since a year ago when the U.S. again responded by blowing up an airfield.
Right.
To the previous attacks. Right. Apparently, these gas attacks have been, the chemical attacks, allegedly have continued over the years. So where has the deterrent been? Why are we still carrying out these attacks in response to alleged chemical attacks on the populace?
Well, and I believe, though, if we stop and think about it, this is the type of conundrum that United States presidents face.
Mm-hmm.
We can't put up with this. We are the leader of the free world. We have to do something, right?
Right.
But what can we truly do? Can we go in and take over this country?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we want to get involved in? So presidents, whether it's President Trump, President Obama, the Bushes, President mm-hmm. Clinton, they have limited options on how far
exactly.
can they really go before they start dragging us into something maybe we don't want to get involved in.
Exactly.
So it's very tough to, I think, tough waters to navigate.
Right.
And
in other words, how far do you go to upset the Russians and Iran before they want to respond in kind? How far do you go before other neighboring states get pulled into, against their better judgment, get pulled into these types of conflicts? It's a no-win situation.
It's interesting because there was some talk I heard earlier tonight on news, I forget if it was you or I saw on TV, but about Russia and how much can Russia really do? Decrepit military.
Right. We had that story earlier.
Okay, so
right.
that was a report you had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their weakened economy, stuff like that.
Right.
It's interesting because President Trump has been so anti, I would say, clean fuels, whether that's tariffs that have hurt solar panels, pushing for more coal jobs, things mm-hmm. like that. And what it seems to me has weakened Russia has been the dropping of the cost of a barrel of oil, right? Isn't that the... Wouldn't that be one of the biggest problems?
Cost of oil has gone down, sure.
A ton in the last
They're heavily invested in oil.
And that's a major, major part of their economy.
Yeah.
Oil tanks, that severely cripples Russia.
Mm-hmm.
President Trump should be doing everything in his power to promote clean air, to promote solar, to promote wind turbine, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're ever going to take power away from the Middle East and power away from Russia, it's in the oil. It's in the oil that they have. And if we can make ourselves less reliant on them
mm-hmm.
and cripple their economies in that way, I mean, there's only so much you can do. I mean, you look at the North Korean situation where we haven't gotten anywhere. Now, maybe we will, but they now ostensibly have the bomb.
Right.
So they now have a seat at the table. The one true way to hurt countries is economically. Look at how Russia is fighting us right now
mm-hmm.
through technology.
Right.
And I really think while you can deny climate change, you can do all these things, you can say, no, these are good American jobs we need. If you look at the bigger picture globally, if we want to have an advantage over Russia,
mm-hmm.
we don't have a reliance like that on producing oil. We have all this other aspects to our economy. Russia, many of these Middle Eastern countries really depend on sales of oil.
Well, I think that the U.S. has tried to do this. If I remember, one of the planks that President Obama was pushing for a long time was to make the U.S. energy dependent. And he pushed the alternative
energy
initiative.
Independent?
I'm sorry?
You said energy dependent.
And energy independent.
Sure.
Yeah. In other words, producing more energy through alternative means here.
And we have been. I mean, we have become much
right.
and much less reliant.
Extremely less reliant. And that has led to a lot of the issues that Russia is facing now economically.
Well, we have to keep pushing that way. I don't think we should hesitate to move backwards on that. And I don't think that even with policies, you're really going to push backwards on that. I think the technology is out there. And I think that entrepreneurs see the possibility of making lots of money
mm-hmm.
from those. So I imagine they're going to keep going. But those tariffs on solar panels, I'm sure, didn't help earlier this year. Got some calls coming in at 312-981-7200. Let's get to those after a quick break. 720 WGN. Hyperbolic here with you, 720 WGN 312-981-7200. Starting out talking a little bit about the airstrikes in Syria that took place early this morning, late last night. 847 says, so I wake up terrified for my daughter in New York City. Would Russia respond with an airstrike on New York City? Ugh. No, they would not. I mean, of course they could, but that means literally all out World War III, and then we're all gone. So if Russia attacks New York City, President Trump will not calmly respond to that. There will be, that would be awful. If Russia responds, and they will in some way, I don't know how, but at worst, I would say, and this would be terrible, but they would strike military targets we have overseas. Roger, is that a fair guess, wouldn't you say? I know you and I are not experts on international relations or military policy, but true. I don't see Russia jumping to attacking New York City because that would just be the end of the world. They would possibly,
yeah.
I mean, and even, I highly doubt they would even attack the U.S. military because that would ratchet things up greatly. I don't know what their response could be. I don't think they would ever attack the U.S. military directly because we didn't attack Russia's military directly.
But with Russia's support of Syria, you have, by default, attacked Russia.
I don't think they're going to position
They will have to consider their options of a response, whether or not they want to respond. I mean, that's what everyone is. That's the other shoe waiting to drop now.
Yeah.
But nobody is attacking the United States.
No.
No.
That won't happen.
No.
That won't happen. Rest easy. Your daughter in New York City will be fine. 417 writes, what happened to the deal reached by then Secretary of State John Kerry that was supposed to have disposed of all of Assad's chemical weapons? Well, I just searched that real quick, and I came up with a story from the Daily Mail in the UK from September of 2013. American plans for military strikes on Syria were in disarray last night after Russia seized on a blunder from U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Kerry suggested that Syrian tyrant could prevent international military action against his country by giving up his chemical weapons arsenal. He caused further confusion in Washington by promising any missile strikes that may take place would be, quote, unbelievably small. Lest we think that we were unhappy with our politicians only in the last year and a half, there have been many times over the years, and it sounds like, and I don't remember this at all, this is 5 years ago now, but that Senator, so they've been dealing with this, so Assad is, it's crazy how these dictators get away with this, give them a little bit back. I know, but of course they're a dictator in their country,
right?
But they're not a dictator of the world,
no,
right?
No.
But it's very hard for superpowers to get rid of people or to change things without getting too heavily involved.
Because the superpowers have agendas of their own. If you look at Politics 101, you know that, and world history, you know that politics of a region, political allegiances in any region around the world, is always shifting. And countries who lack resources in certain areas or feel as though they have a need for strategic outposts to protect their interests will manipulate the politics of a region through investments, through support, through third-party support, maybe not directly. And this is what continually goes on throughout the world, and this is why we continue to have conflicts. One of the many reasons why we have conflicts. Many conflicts around the world are based on religious differences within a country.
Sure.
Groups of people. These are centuries-old conflicts. Look at the conflict in Israel. Look at the conflict in Syria, in the Arab states, with the different religious orders. So, but politics, you remember the game Risk?
I do.
Did you ever play it?
I didn't.
It is an intense, politically based game that I have seen played for 24 hours straight by people.
Really?
Seriously. It is the game of world domination.
Yeah.
And this is what, unfortunately, our world leaders sometimes play.
All right, let's take a quick call before we get to the news and get our latest update from ABC Lens on 720 WGN. Good morning, Len. How are you?
Hi, good. You know, you were talking about oil prices and, you know, how we need to develop clean energy. Well, we haven't slowed down on the development of clean energy. And with the oil, I trade oil.
Okay.
And we're beating them at their own game. We're producing more oil than we ever have in the history of the United States. And if you look at the close today at 67.39, okay, that's near the year high. Okay, every time the Russians and the Middle Easterners try to squeeze the market, we just dump all the oil we can back on the market. So every time I say we'll hit $60 a barrel before we hit 70, so that's giving me a $2.50 leeway, because I guarantee you we'll start dumping oil on the market.
Good.
And so we're not beholden to these people, and it's so important to our economy to keep our oil prices in the $2 range.
Yeah.
You know, that extra, you know, $2 in everyone's pocket, when you multiply that by the, you know, the population, it means a whole lot to the United States. But we develop our own oil now. We're not beholden to anybody.
Well, it's not just that, though. I also feel that internationally, and thank you so much for the call, Len, I appreciate you jumping in, that the more we develop solar and other forms of energy, wind or hydrogen-powered cars, different things like that, not just the United States, and I agree, where our oil prices have dropped, gas has been good for the last couple of years, goes up and down, depending on things, but it's in such a better place. But the more that we can move to a world of clean energy, the less power the countries that are so dependent on the revenue from oil are going to be. Right now, they're probably selling a ton to India or to China or different places like that. We all have more fears about nuclear, so we're avoiding that. So oil back on the upswing, right? But the more we can develop and promote and make cheap solar, wind, other things like that, I think the better we're going to be. All right, it's 2:30 in the morning. We'll get a check from ABC News within Roger's newscast. Let's get upstairs and get the headlines, Roger. Thank you, Roger. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. We'll be here till 5 in the morning. We'll check in again with Roger at the top of the hour, but if there's any breaking news, he will break in as necessary. We'll jump away from Syria for a little bit. We'll talk about that and President Trump a little bit more later on in the show. But I want to jump to something we've talked off and on about over the last couple of months, and that's travel to Mexico. As you know, if you've listened to the show for the last 4 or 5 years, I love going to Mexico. This is the first year in like the last 6 that Colleen and I never got a chance to go down. Last year, we took the kids for the first time. I love going down to Cancun and the Riviera Maya, Playa del Carmen area. And it's, you know, for the most part, it's never been trouble at all. And as I sit here looking out on Michigan Avenue in this ridiculous April weather that we're having this weekend, I would like to be in Mexico right now. There'd be no reason I couldn't do the show from there.
None whatsoever. You could take me, too. I could be your valet.
Yeah, we could figure something out, I would think.
Of course.
But there are all of these stories, and it started with a great investigative piece from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about all these people from Wisconsin that have gone down and had issues with blacking out, with passing out. And at first, when you're reading, you're like, well, Wisconsin, they're drinking pretty heavy. But then you say, wait a minute, people who know how to hold their drink. And they're saying, no, only had 2. And suddenly I wake up, knees all scraped up in my hotel room, or some cases of assault. Real issues with going to the hospital and basically feeling like you're being held for ransom in a way, because they're asking for all this cash before they'll treat you. Resorts not wanting to call the police, not wanting to call you an ambulance. You're taking cabs there. All sorts of stories coming out. It used to be when I would go to Mexico, my mom would be all worried because you're hearing stories about the gangland murders down in the drug dealers.
Oh, right.
And
yeah.
Basically, it's like, listen, if you're going to a resort and you're staying at the resort, you're not going to have any problems. But now there's all these other stories. There was a ferry bombing on the ferry that goes from Playa del Carmen to Cozumel, and then another one that was stopped before it happened. So there's all these warnings now from our government about travel to Mexico. And at first, when those came out, I thought, well, that's President Trump, you know, standing up to Mexico and fighting over the wall and stuff like that. But now I've got more and more friends saying, I'm not going to Mexico, and it's killing me because I love Mexico and I love going there. So we wanted to talk a little bit more about this. Chris Woody is a reporter for Business Insider, and he jumps on the phone with us right now. Hey, Chris, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for being on with us. Overall, do you think that the concerns about travel to Mexico and specifically Cancun and the whole Riviera Maya are being overblown? Or is this something Americans really need to think about before they make that trip?
Well, you know, it's tough to say. I would say my advice would be, you know, you need to consider for yourself what kind of risk you're willing to take. I don't think going to a place like Cancun or the Riviera Maya or in Los Cabos or somewhere in like Mexico City, I don't think going to those places you're going to face an outsized risk, as long as you are, you know, responsible and you kind of, you know, carry yourself the way you would visiting, you know, any city in the world or in the U.S.
There is a risk, though, when we travel internationally, and that we don't think about much because some of these places seem so Americanized. If you're just going to a resort in Mexico, especially the all-inclusive resorts, they do such a good job of taking care of everything that you don't really realize that much that you're in a foreign land, other than everybody has broken English and you're in an exotic location that you know you don't see at home. But there is a bit of a risk, I guess, when we travel overseas, it's sometimes, or not overseas necessarily, but to another country, that we don't think about, that if there is a medical emergency, is the healthcare going to be as good? Is it going to be a problem then if you don't speak the language? How much preparation should we take as Americans when we go to other countries and think about if something does go wrong?
Well, it should be something you plan for, something you consider when you go down there. It's you're right to say that somewhere like Cancun or Playa del Carmen or places in Los Cabos, those are the resort areas. They really are enclaves, and you have lots of places to lounge and for recreation and for lodging. But if you need emergency services, if you need health care, if you need something else, you know, that's something you have to provide from the local community in a lot of places in Mexico, especially on the outskirts of you know, Cancun and other tourist areas. The services really aren't that good, and there are issues with security. Corruption is rampant, particularly among police forces. So you know, I the cases you mentioned earlier about you know, people being drugged or thinking they're being drugged, I mean, those are obviously serious and something to take note of, but those are really the minority. So I wouldn't discourage people from going to Mexico, and I wouldn't tell them that they need to, you know, back off because of these stories. But it is something to keep in mind when you're planning a trip down there.
The one part of the story that did alarm me or surprise me a little bit when these were first being reported was that there has been a problem with tainted alcohol in Mexico, and that up to, I want to say, I'd have to find it in this report again, that something like up to 30% of the alcohol bought and sold in Mexico is not necessarily produced up to standard, that there is sort of a black market of alcohol sales. And that was surprising to me. How, you know, because especially when we come from America, where we come from such a regulated country, where if we're at a hotel or we're at a restaurant and they're serving alcohol, we fully well expect that it's going to be that there shouldn't ever be any problems with it. We're just not used to that ever being something we would worry about. I know that there's a huge drug cartel issue in Mexico, but I was surprised to read that that it's possible that these resorts are ending up with, and maybe not through any fault of their own, tainted alcohol.
Yeah, that's, I haven't done too much work on that issue, so I can't speak to specifics. I imagine there's probably, you know, if you were to just buy, you know, a six pack from a store somewhere in the city, it's probably different than bulk alcohol that's being,
right,
you know, sold to a bar or a restaurant. But at the same time, you know, there are issues with widespread corruption. So it wouldn't really surprise me that if there were, you know, these kind of extensive markets of you know, illicit goods or goods being sold in legitimate markets without meeting requirements and regulations.
Until these stories were coming out in the last 6 months or so, most of the talk about any concerns in Mexico has been about drug cartels. And with the way the U.S. and Mexico are exchanging words these days, what is the status of the cartels down there? What's the latest on the wars within the country and the murders that we hear about and read about, as well as the infiltration of the drugs into the U.S.?
Well, so violence in Mexico is on the rise. It's been on the rise since, you know, pretty consistently since about 2015. I think in 2017, it was up by about 25% or so. It went from about 22,000 homicides in 2016 to close to 28,000 homicides in 2017. A lot of that is competition between organized crime groups, and I say organized crime rather than cartels, because one of the trends you've seen that's driving this is kind of a breakdown of these larger cartels, for a lot of reasons, you know, internal fighting, pressure from the government. So they're kind of breaking down into these factions, and they're competing over not only, you know, drug trafficking territories, but they're also fighting over control of things like extortion rackets or oil theft, or, you know, other kind of criminal enterprises. And that's really driving a lot of the violence. But at the same time, that violence is concentrating in specific areas. A lot of it's in northern Mexico. You have a lot of it in southwest Mexico and up and down the west coast. You know, areas, tourist areas like Quintana Roo, which is the state that Cancun is in, and Baja California Sur, which is where Los Cabos is, they've seen, you know, considerable increases. I think Los Cabos, it's up, you know, a couple 100%. But a lot of that violence is taking place outside of tourist areas. So, you know, in for American travelers, again, it's something to note, but most places Americans are going, you know, this increase in crime is not having a direct impact. And it's important to say that Americans and international travelers, they're not being directly targeted by a lot of this violence.
I know you wrote about you mentioned the oil being stolen, and you wrote a story that Mexico's oil company is losing more than $1 billion a year to cartels, and its employees are the ones helping this out. It's amazing to think of a country like Mexico actually having cartels stealing. I mean, could you imagine in America us hearing that, you know, gangs are stealing oil to the tune of $1 billion a year? Is that really a symbol of how much strength these cartels really have, that they're actually robbing $1 billion of oil a year from the oil company? That seems stunning.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of factors there. Obviously, you know, these criminal groups, they're strong, particularly in past years when you had larger groups like the Zetas or the Gulf Cartel or the Sinaloa Cartel. When they were at their peaks, they were very powerful, and they can really exercise a lot of influence in specific areas of the country. But at the same time, you know, Mexico's pipeline network, it's vast. There's something like, this may not be correct, but I think it's like 14,000 miles of pipeline. So there's a lot of area, a lot of ground to cover. In the Mexican authorities, obviously they have an issue with corruption, but at the same time, you know, they just can't be everywhere at once. So there's a lot of, factors going into that. It's true that cartels are behind this, but we also have people in, you know, in marginalized areas in Mexico where they don't have a lot of services. For them, it makes sense to tap these pipelines to get fuel for their own use and to resell to make some money, because, you know, they don't have many other options. And it's true that employees from Pemex, which is the state oil company there, in a lot of cases, they're complicit. They're making money off of this, but in other cases, you know, they're being forced into it. They face threats and violence, sure, from these criminal groups that are doing it.
But I'm sorry, they're actually stealing the oil? Like what? How do you steal oil from a pipeline or off of a train and divert it to somebody? And then who do you sell that to?
So when you're stealing it from the pipeline, a lot of times they tap the line, they break into it, they attach a hose. Some of those attempts are really quite rudimentary. You just have a hole with a hose plugged into it, and fuel is offloaded into like a bucket or something. In other cases, you know, when you have more organized groups doing it, what they'll do is they'll tap the line, and they'll have tanks installed underneath under the ground, and it'll cover those, and the tanks will get filled, and no one will see it because it's underground, and they'll come back periodically and take out these full tanks of gasoline. And in other cases, you know, if you have Pemex employees working for you, they can just cook the books, and you can take that excess fuel straight from tanker trucks and stuff like that. As far as resale, in some parts of the country, you can just drive by roadside stands and they'll have big buckets of it you can buy. In other places, you know, when corruption is at play, you'll have, you know, gas stations that buy illegally obtained fuel, and Pemex and the Mexican government have shut down a lot of gas stations that have been doing that. There's other cases. I don't have specifics, but I've heard that, you know, some of the stolen fuel is resold into the legitimate market and makes its way into the U.S. So it's a really complex enterprise with varying levels of sophistication and a lot of factors that are driving it.
That's really amazing to think that they can pull that off. That's impressive, to say the least. So the pipeline itself is not just oil. There's actually produced gasoline going through the pipeline?
I think it depends on the pipeline, but I'm sure that's the case. I haven't done a whole lot of work on the gas industry specifically.
It's amazing stuff. Christopher Woody, a reporter for BusinessInsider.com. I really appreciate you jumping on the phone tonight.
My pleasure.
All right. Have a great evening, Christopher Woody. In a little bit, I'm seeing on CNN that the British Prime Minister is going to speak about the strikes on Syria. So we'll check in to see what the latest is on that. And we'll keep you updated throughout the night to see if there's any other updates on response from Iran, from Russia. Russia has been threatening since we started this and since the Twitter war started earlier last week. I do want to get into now. We'll stay tuned to that and talk more about that. But I'm curious. I was thinking about this earlier this week, about doing a conversation tonight on this presidency, because now we're talking about Syria instead of all the other things that happened this week, including the raid on Cohen's office and what's coming out of that, what might have been found. But I do wonder, whether you like or don't like this presidency, I do think there's a scenario. Right now, you would say this presidency will be looked back upon badly. I do think there are scenarios where President Trump can still be looked back upon positively for his presidency. I do believe he still has those opportunities. I want to tell you what those are in a minute here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN, the latest from Roger and ABC News at the top of the hour in 4.5 minutes. They're waiting for the British Prime Minister to make a statement on Syria. We'll get you what she says. 312-981-7200 is the phone number here at 720 WGN. It's also the place where you can text us. I got yelled at. 847 writes, "You are being an idiot. Mexico is perfectly safe. Stop slamming a country that I love. P.S. If you're going to stay in an all-inclusive resort, why don't you just go to Florida? You're missing out on the beautiful culture and the charm of the Mexican country." Two things.
Wow.
Maybe three. Yes, I am an idiot. Fun. We've established that. Not news.
Didn't get it from me.
B, Mexico is perfectly safe. That's not completely true. There was a ferry going from Cozumel to Playa that exploded in February. That's not completely safe. There are cartels and, you know, listen, I do think it's completely safe if you're smart, if you don't get involved in drug deals and things like that, if you, you know, keep your nose clean as you're down there, it's more than likely going to be perfectly safe. Yes, but there are things that have happened. There is this issue with these resorts and the alcohol. C, I don't go to Florida because there are not all-inclusive resorts for one fee in Florida. We don't do that in the U.S. You know why? Be too damn expensive. In Mexico, you can pull that off because it's cheaper. And I'm sorry, but Mexico, you know, Cancun's about an hour at least south of Florida, and it's warmer, and the beaches are beautiful.
So there.
And I love Mexico, too. And last year when we went to Tulum, we got out. We went to some ruins. It was wonderful. So I'm not slamming Mexico. They do have their issues, just as we all do. I do think, Roger, that it is possible that 10 years from now, we will look back on President Trump's presidency in a positive light. Right now, that seems impossible. Even if you are gung-ho Trump-loving, you would have to say this hasn't been the best year and a half. You might say, hey, we passed tax reform.
Right.
We've cut out a lot of terrible restrictions and regulations that were hurting businesses. There are a lot of positive things you could try to spin if you are pro-President Trump. Stock market's been bullish, yada, yada. But all the other stuff going on, the investigations, the payoffs, all this stuff is dragging it down. However, I was thinking about this week, that I don't think that all hope is lost on 5-10 years from now, people looking back and saying it wasn't so bad. George W. left with some pretty low approval ratings. Now he's, you know, time heals a lot of wounds.
Right. 20, and, what is it? Rear view or, I'll think of the saying. There's a saying.
In the mirror may be closer than they appear.
No, not that one. Oh. But it's just
about your rear view mirror.
Looking back, it's always 20/20. You see things
clearer.
Hindsight
is 20/20.
Hindsight. Thank you. I knew that word. Hindsight is 20/20. Right. We see things in a clear light because we know more information later on that comes out.
Well, but I also think the information we know later on about George W. Bush is not made for a better presidency because, you know, later on, we found out maybe that Iraq war wasn't such a great idea. But I think you just look back on him and you try to you start understanding a little more of what they were involved in at the time, what was going on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I do think there are a couple of ways, though, that President Trump could be thought of more be thought of very positively. And I want to get into those after the news. I know we got to hit an update here. Roger, also, I've been seeing on CNN, they're waiting on British Prime Minister Theresa May to make a statement on Syria. If there's any way after the news that you could try to see if there's an audio feed when she goes live, I'd love to take that, if that's possible. I know you'll have to figure that out.
Well, she spoke earlier. She did speak earlier.
I think she's going to speak again.
I'll look that up. We're getting a word that President Putin wants a emergency session of the U.N. Security Council.
That'll be interesting.
To be called, so.
All right, well, let's get the latest updates. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. If you have a smart speaker, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Sponsored by Pearl Mortgage, here's your news with Roger Badish. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. I'm in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on the in the historic Tribune Tower on the lovely Michigan Avenue, which is a rainy and cold and kind of gross Michigan Avenue right now. Roger Badish is up in the newsroom. Jess Raines is behind the glass. Roger, we have pizza down here, and I know you're kind of locked in right now because we're waiting on Theresa May to speak, and we don't know when that's going to happen. If you're not able to get the audio, I'll try to pull it off down here. So when she gets out there, let me know if it's not working out up there, okay? And I will sort of make do down here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The weather is brutal. And my sons were supposed to have a outdoor baseball tournament all weekend this week. And they actually canceled the whole thing before we had to play tonight. And I know that sounds like, well, of course they did. But no, you don't understand. The tournament has to refund all the money if they don't play. So generally there's a 2-game minimum. So they do their absolute best to make sure you play 2 games because otherwise they got to refund all the money. The weather report for this weekend was bad enough that they just canceled the entire thing. So we were thankful for that because it was miserable out there tonight and a slippery drive in. So be careful if you're out there on the roads. It's warm enough that it's okay out there, but it's not good. It's not working out, Raj. Here, let's try this.
We've got Theresa May. Sorry. We've got Theresa May speaking. We're trying to bring you the audio right now.
Okay.
And unfortunately, we are unable to get that audio for you right now. Are you able to bring it up down there on...
at a military facility some 15 miles west of Homs, where the regime is assessed to keep chemical weapons in breach of Syria's obligations under the Chemical Weapons Convention. While the full assessment of the strike is ongoing, we are confident of its success.
I've got you turned down right now.
Let me set out why we have taken this action. Last Saturday, up to 75 people, including young children, were killed in a despicable and barbaric attack in Douma, with as many as 500 further casualties. We have worked with our allies to establish what happened, and all the indications are that this was a chemical weapons attack. We have seen the harrowing images of men, women, and children lying dead with foam in their mouths. These were innocent families who, at the time this chemical weapon was unleashed, were seeking shelter underground in basements. First-hand accounts from NGOs and aid workers have detailed the most horrific suffering, including burns to the eyes, suffocation and skin discoloration, with a chlorine-like odour surrounding the victims. And the World Health Organization has received reports that hundreds of patients arrived at Syrian health facilities on Saturday night with signs and symptoms consistent with exposure to toxic chemicals. We are also clear about who was responsible for this atrocity. A significant body of information, including intelligence, indicates the Syrian regime is responsible for this latest attack. I cannot tell you everything, but let me give an example of some of the evidence that leads us to this conclusion. Open source accounts allege that a barrel bomb was used to deliver the chemicals. Multiple open source reports claim that a regime helicopter was observed above the city of Douma on the evening of the 7th of April. The opposition does not operate helicopters or use barrel bombs. And reliable intelligence indicates that Syrian military officials coordinated what appears to be the use of chlorine in Douma on the 7th of April. No other group could have carried out this attack. Indeed, Daesh, for example, does not even have a presence in Douma. And the fact of this attack should surprise no one. We know that the Syrian regime has an utterly abhorrent record of using chemical weapons against its own people. On the 21st of August 2013, over 800 people were killed and thousands more injured in a chemical attack also in Ghouta. There were 14 further smaller-scale chemicals attack prior to that summer. At Khan Sheikhoun on the 4th of April last year, the Syrian regime used sarin against its people, killing around 100 with a further 500 casualties. And based on the regime's persistent pattern of behaviour and the cumulative analysis of specific incidents, we judge it highly likely both that the Syrian regime has continued to use chemical weapons since then and will continue to do so. This must be stopped. We have sought to do so using every possible diplomatic channel, but our efforts have been repeatedly thwarted, both on the ground and in the United Nations. Following the sarin attack in eastern Damascus back in August 2013, the Syrian regime committed to dismantle its chemical weapon program, and Russia promised to ensure that Syria did this, overseen by the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. But these commitments have not been met. A recent report from the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons has said that Syria's declaration of its former chemical weapons program is incomplete. This indicates that it continues to retain undeclared stocks of nerve agent or precursor chemicals and is likely to be continuing with some chemical weapons production. The OPCW inspectors have investigated previous attacks and on four occasions decided that the regime was indeed responsible. And on each occasion, when we have seen every sign of chemical weapons being used, any attempt to hold the perpetrators to account has been blocked by Russia at the UN Security Council, with six such vetoes since the start of 2017. Just this week, the Russians vetoed a draft resolution that would have established an independent investigation into this latest attack. even making the grotesque and absurd claim that it was staged by Britain. So we have no choice but to conclude that diplomatic action on its own will not be any more effective in the future than it has been in the past. Over the last week, the UK government has been working intensively with our international partners to build the evidence picture and to consider what action we need to take to prevent and deter future humanitarian catastrophes caused by chemical weapons attacks. When the Cabinet met on Thursday, we considered the advice of the Attorney General, the National Security Advisor, and the Chief of the Defence Staff, and we were updated on the latest assessment and intelligence picture. And based on this advice, we agreed that it was both right and legal to take military action, together with our closest allies, to alleviate further humanitarian suffering by degrading the Syrian regime's chemical weapons capability and deterring their use. This was not about interfering in a civil war, and it was not about regime change. As I discussed with President Trump and President Macron, it was a limited, targeted, and effective strike with clear boundaries that expressly sought to avoid escalation and did everything possible to prevent civilian casualties. Together, we have hit a specific and limited set of targets. They were a chemical weapons storage and production facility, a key chemical weapons research centre, and a military bunker involved in chemical weapons attacks. Hitting these targets with the force that we have deployed will significantly degrade the Syrian regime's ability to research, develop, and deploy chemical weapons. A year ago, after the atrocity at Khan Sheikhoun, the US conducted a strike on the airfield from which the attack took place. But Assad and his regime hasn't stopped their use of chemical weapons. So last night's strikes by the US, UK and France were significantly larger than the US action a year ago and specifically designed to have a greater impact on the regime's capability and willingness to use chemical weapons. And this collective action sends a clear message that the international community will not stand by and tolerate the use of chemical weapons. I also want to be clear that this military action to deter the use of chemical weapons does not stand alone. We must remain committed to resolving the conflict at large. The best hope for the Syrian people remains a political solution. We need all partners, especially the regime and its backers, to enable humanitarian access to those in desperate need, and the UK will continue to strive for both. But these strikes are about deterring the barbaric use of chemical weapons in Syria and beyond. And so to achieve this, there must also be a wider diplomatic effort, including the full range of political and economic levers, to strengthen the global norms prohibiting the use of chemical weapons, which have stood for nearly a century. Although of a much lower order of magnitude, the use of a nerve agent on the streets of the UK in recent weeks is part of a pattern of disregard for these norms. So while this action is specifically about deterring the Syrian regime, it will also send a clear signal to anyone else who believes they can use chemical weapons with impunity. There is no graver decision for a Prime Minister than to commit our forces to combat. And this is the first time that I have had to do so. As always, they have served our country with the greatest professionalism and bravery, and we owe them a huge debt of gratitude. We would have preferred an alternative path, but on this occasion there is none. We cannot allow the use of chemical weapons to become normalised, either within Syria, on the streets of the UK, or elsewhere. We must reinstate the global consensus that chemical weapons cannot be used. This action is absolutely in Britain's national interest. The lesson of history is that when the global rules and standards that keep us safe come under threat, we must take a stand and defend them. That is what our country has always done, and that is what we will continue to do. I'll take a number of questions. Let me start with Laura.
Roger, can you bring it up now?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I hope I've got
thank
it.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Laura Koonsberg, BBC News. Your logic is that chemical attacks must not go unpunished. Will you do the same again if President Assad does the same again, as you have suggested he has? And do you feel you have the public's consent, given that you have not even consulted MPs in Parliament?
As I said in my statement, the purpose of the action that took place last night was to degrade and deter the capability and willingness of the Syrian regime to use chemical weapons. As I also said, obviously a full assessment has not yet been completed, but we believe that the action was successful. But the Syrian regime should be under no doubt of our resolve in relation to this matter of the use of chemical weapons. And I have taken this decision because I believe it is the right thing to do. I believe it is in our national interest, but I believe it is also important for the international community to be very clear about this issue, that we have seen people appearing to think that they can use chemical weapons with impunity. And we must restore the position of that, as I said, has existed for nearly a century, that the use of chemical weapons is illegal, it is banned, and we cannot accept it. Tim?
Thank you, Prime Minister.
It's the Matt Bubala Show on 720 WGN. We're listening live to a press conference. British Prime Minister Theresa May made a statement on using an airstrike along with the U.S. and France against Syria. She's taking some questions now.
Action against Russian money in London in the same way that the United States has. And on a linked point, we appear to be in a propaganda war with the Russians. Why have no ministers been out explaining what you've been explaining today throughout a week in which the Russian ambassador has been accusing Britain of culpability for the crimes that you've addressed this evening?
Well, on the first point, as you will know, Tim, and as I said in response to the use of the nerve agent on the streets of Salisbury, we are, of course, looking at every aspect of the action that can be taken. We do, in general, work against illicit finances, against criminal finances here in the UK, and we will continue to do so. You say that no minister has been out over the past week. I've given two television interviews over the past week in which I've set out the need for action and the need for us to restore the international norm of the recognition that chemical weapons should not be used. What I said in those interviews was that we were working with our international partners and allies to ascertain, make the fullest possible assessment of what happened on the ground, and then to ascertain what action was necessary. We've done that, and the action that we saw last night into the early hours of this morning was the result of that work. Adam.
Prime Minister, I wonder if you could explain a little more your decision and your thinking on not seeking prior approval or debate from Parliament on this decision, because, as you know, Jeremy Corbyn and, on the other side, Kenneth Clark have both said that they feel that that should have taken place. And there seems to be a feeling abroad that Tony Blair set a precedent back in 2003.
Well, as I said, as I've just said, I believe that this action was necessary. I believe it was the right thing for us to do. We have been working with our allies and partners over the past week, first to make the fullest possible assessment of what happened on the ground, and then to consider what action was necessary.
We won't stay with this for too much longer, because now they're getting into whether or not, you know, local politics, I would say. But I do want to see if there's another question before we go to break about, she made a very interesting statement saying that on a smaller scale, this is also about chemical weapons being used in the UK.
Right.
And there's that whole story we'll talk a little bit about here after the news, where there was an ex-Russian agent who was poisoned.
And his daughter.
By chemical weapons. Mm-hmm. And they believe it was done by Russia. And so there was a, hey, we're also sending a message, this won't be put up with. Here was their way to do that. I want to see if she gets one more question about that. We'll stay with this for another minute.
Protect their safety and their security. And for operational security reasons, it was right that we've acted in the way that we did. Properly plan this, assess what happened on the ground, properly plan it, act within a timescale that's right to both protect operational security and give a very clear message to the regime. Robert?
you explicitly linked the overnight action to the poisonings in Salisbury.
Ding, 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 ding.
Was the overnight action just about Assad, or was it explicitly a warning to Russia as well? The Secretary General is warning that the Cold War is back, and he is fearful we don't have the institutional structures to contain it. How do we restore a sense of calm and security?
Well, first of all, I refer to the Salisbury, what happened in Salisbury, because it was the use of a chemical weapon, a nerve agent, on the streets of the United Kingdom. The action that took place last night was an action which was focused on degrading and deterring the operational capability and the willingness of the Syrian regime to continue to use chemical weapons. As I said, there have been many instances when we have seen them using those chemical weapons. But I believe it should also be a message to others that the international community is not going to stand by and allow chemical weapons to be used with impunity. We have, for nearly a century now, had a general understanding under the Chemical Weapons Convention that chemical weapons were illegal, that their use was banned. We have in recent times all too often seen chemical weapons being used. I think it's right that the international community has come together and said that we will not accept this and given a very clear message about that we want to re-establish that international norm that chemical weapons are banned and should not be used.
So there you have it. There is Theresa May, British Prime Minister, speaking to the nation, taking questions now. And as I mentioned, as she made the statement, she got about halfway through it and said, and by the way, in a smaller part, you know, there's a chemical attack here. And I'm not saying who did it, but this is a message to all those people that you can't be doing that stuff. And of course, they're blaming Russia for that. Russia's saying, what are you talking about? We don't know. They don't say it like that, but
no,
it's sort of
like
that.
I don't think so, no.
It was a little... it was a little more rocky and bullwinkle.
Yeah, right.
Natasha said, we don't know chemical weapon.
No.
Sort of Barat.
Everyone to get from Street.
Thank you. That's better. I know John Williams does a very good Rocky and Bullwinkle, but I don't. So that was very interesting to hear that. We need to take a quick break.
Yeah.
We got to do the news, get our latest ABC News update, and then let's talk a little bit more about where we head from here. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala Show here with you 3:30 in the morning. Let's get the latest check of news. Now upstairs, it's Roger Badish. In the morning, Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Theresa May still speaking to the nation in Britain, taking questions from reporters. I wonder if, President Trump's, he might be up by now.
He might be watching.
Middle of the night tinkle break and a tweet coming along at any moment now. But I wonder if he's watching this and going, you know, they're being pretty good about just asking about the strike. Maybe I do a press conference tomorrow. Take my chances.
Well, but he already spoke to the nation.
He spoke to the nation.
He and he stuck to the script.
Questions from the press.
There wasn't any.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if, like, he's seeing this and going, well, maybe this would be my chance.
No.
But I think that would be a bad mistake.
Yeah.
Because I think we'd get two questions about Syria and then Stormy, Michael Cohen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I think what you might get is what he has normally done. He will walk past the media at either walking out to the helicopter or at some event, walking past them, and they yell out questions, and he might make a comment about how successful the raid was, the attacks were, and then move on. That seems to be his modus operandi lately.
Yeah, it's a smart way to do it. If you don't want to keep answering them, just give them a little bit and then move along. So the thing I keyed on as we were listening to Theresa May was the comment she made during her statement about, she said, on a smaller scale, this is also about sending a message to nations that chemical weapon use will not be tolerated.
Mm-hmm.
That we had a chemical weapon attack on UK soil just recently. On the 4th of March, a former Russian agent, or I guess a double agent, he came to England in a spy swap. So apparently England sent Russia one of their spies. They got one of their spies. Former Russian spy Sergei, is it Skripal or Skripal? I'm not sure the pronunciation. And his daughter Yulia were in Salisbury in the UK. They were allegedly attacked by a chemical. They from what I've read, it was maybe placed on their front door or something. They walked out the door. They ended up in a park and were in distress. They are recovering. Police took them. I believe they're recovering is what I read in this. And I don't know how many days old this story is now, 12th of April. So it's not that old. But it's been identified as a nerve agent that pretty much can only be produced by Russia. I think a nerve agent Russia invented. They said that it was almost completely pure. There were no impurities in it. That would mean that it was produced very professionally. Russia, of course, is denying this and basically saying it's fake news. They didn't do it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As you can imagine, as we would be upset here if Russia had attacked somebody on our soil, they're not happy about this. And I imagine countries have done this over the years. I imagine we've attacked some people in other countries who had information we didn't like, et cetera. I don't know what, and I don't know what the Skripals were doing. There was a spy exchange, so they handed him over to England. The Skripals were found collapsed on a park bench in Salisbury on the 4th of March. A police officer, Detective Sergeant Nick Bailey, who was among the first at the scene, was also taken to the hospital, but he was discharged. The UK government's position is that it is highly likely the Russian state targeted the Skripals with a nerve agent, which military experts identified as Novichok. Russia has denied involvement and waged a propaganda battle to try to discredit Britain's account of the attack, which sparked an international row resulting in the expulsions of diplomats from all sides. So, Britain, the U.S., and France combined together to send these missiles into Syria. Syria, as Roger reported in the news, is saying didn't do much damage, nobody hurt. I imagine they're downplaying it a little bit. Hopefully it did some damage to their military installations. That's good if nobody was killed. That's the danger you run into in these situations, is that you're going to kill a bunch of innocent civilians as you're trying to take down the military operations. And you would imagine somebody like Assad is hiding would be stockpiling the chemical weapons in the basement of the children's hospital and doing things like that to try to avoid them being able to be attacked, or if they are attacked, to then be able to make the country doing the attacking look terrible because here's the civilians that they killed. But we'll keep following it throughout the night. We'll have another report at the top of the hour. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we'll get, I was getting into earlier, Roger, before Theresa May took the stage, talking about whether President Trump can eventually get to a position where we look back on his presidency positively. Right now, while a lot of people do not, and history would not be kind to him right now because of everything from just the last week. And the Michael Cohen stuff sounds like it's getting worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. But I think there's two areas outside of the Syria stuff that he could make progress that has not been seen in decades. We still allegedly have this North Korea summit coming up. It's supposed to happen in May. We haven't heard much detail on
nothing.
There has not been any confirmation, location, a date. Nothing has happened.
That has probably been going on just all behind the scenes.
Sure.
Yeah.
And they haven't talked about it publicly yet. And you have no idea. This could either be something incredible for President Trump, or it could really backfire on him if Kim Jong-un is just using this as an opportunity to get a photo op and say, I got the President of the United States to sit down.
Right.
And they do nothing to denuclearize, then it could backfire on President Trump a little bit. At the very least, he's got an opportunity to say, I did something nobody else has done. For decades now, we've tried to make way with North Korea by just sanctioning the snot out of them, starving mm-hmm. them, things like that. Kim Jong-un doesn't seem to care too much, and he's got enough people working with him, Russia and China, to keep the country going. So unless everybody tightens things up, there's no way to really choke it off. And Russia clearly is not going to help us out in this situation, probably. Nope. So it will be interesting to see what comes out of that meeting. If President Trump is able to get North Korea to denuclearize, and I don't know how much you can truly achieve. I can't imagine a country getting the bomb and then saying, you know what, I'll give it up.
Right.
Why would they do that?
Well, again, it hasn't been verified by independent sources that they have that capability. They are claiming they do.
The U.S. believes that they do.
Right.
And not only do they believe they have the bomb because they have tested bombs, but they believe they could now get one to mainland U.S.
Exactly. But none of this has been verified. And I think one of the conditions of the negotiations, whether with the president or prior to the president getting involved, some of his deputies having initial conversations with the North Koreans, is that before the president meets with you on a neutral soil, we want to inspect your facilities. We want to know for a fact what you have. Now, he may say, no, you don't know. I'm not going to show that hand.
I'd say no to that one if I
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So if he says no, now that meeting gets pushed back because the U.S. needs to know by hook or by crook, because there are, I'm sure, other ways of doing the inspections without, you know, North Korea knowing about it.
Right.
So how the U.S. conducts itself in this, we're not sure how this is going to happen, what is going on right now, what has already been going on. So, again, that meeting in May may not happen till July or December or next year.
It may not, or President Trump may say, you know what, no, let's still meet with him. Let me talk to him face-to-face, because he does believe himself to be a great negotiator, right?
Right.
That is his strength, as he says.
But you're not dealing with property in New York. You're dealing with nuclear bombs.
I understand that, but President Trump doesn't like listening to all those people that say, hey, it's not this, it's that. He doesn't like being told, you can't pull this off.
Right.
That's like the sure way to get him to say, forget it. Gas up the plane. Let's go.
Right.
But if he can effectively make change there, he will be able to claim forever, I did something that none of you could pull off.
Of course.
Same thing in the Middle East with Israel. He's moving the embassy.
Right.
And causing a lot of turmoil there. Mm-hmm. But if somehow, some way, he can effectively broker peace in the Middle East, that's a legacy that, that will
the
make
only one
you
who's
forget
come
about
close
Stormy
is,
and everything else.
The only one who's come close is President Carter.
Clinton had some stuff going on for a while, right? I mean, he was having meetings with those guys.
Nothing on that level.
No.
Nothing on bringing the leaders of two warring nations together and shaking hands over a peace treaty. You know, it's how do you come up to something like that yeah. level? That's major accomplishments. And if he can do it, well, great. He considers himself a great negotiator. Can he do this in the wake of the Syrian issue, in the wake of the problems with Russia? You know, he is, if you hear, let's take the last couple of months and all the criticisms with the Russian thing. He has criticized Russia, but he's not criticizing President Putin.
If well, you he think never about it,
there's a fine line, but there's a fine line there as to his rhetoric. Now, how do you criticize a country and not its leader? How can you do that? The two are combined.
Well, he's trying to parse his words and play a little bit both sides of the aisle. The question is, why is he so kind to Putin? He has said, listen, if we can have a good relationship with Russia, isn't that better than not?
Right.
Theoretically, that makes sense.
Sure.
But as the investigations go on, you start wondering more and more, why is he so kind to Putin? He likes to say, nobody's been harder on Russia than me.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard to back up with any evidence. And you're right, he does not call out Putin. Now, he did say in that tweet, Russia thinks this, hey, Russia, they're coming. And so he did act tough on Russia in that instance, that's for sure. And we'll see what the response is and how he plays it. But you do wonder, does Russia have something on him? Now, I'm not saying they've got some terrible, dirty thing on President Trump. But if Russia's been able to hack into all these things.
Right.
And gather information and different things like that, they might have some dirt that's either just improper transactions during the campaign or who knows what. I don't think they have a P tape. I don't think they have something incredibly seedy. God knows he's got enough stuff going on here in the U.S. that Russia doesn't need to be involved in with the hush money and the love child and God knows what else we're going to find out. But do they have something like Cohen visiting Prague and different meetings? You know, I very much believe that if Russia was reaching out to Trump And say, listen, we see the emails where one of the Trump sons gets the email saying, hey, we've got dirt on Hillary. Right. Great. If that's true, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he responded. So these weren't political experts that said, wait a minute, probably looks bad if we're getting that from Russia. They're like, dude, that helps us win. Let's have it. Hillary did something bad. That'll be about Hillary, not about where we got it from. And so if Russian people were saying, hey, we'll help you win this thing, I doubt he was looking at it from the expert analysis of what that truly means for your presidency and what the legalities of everything are. He's like, hey, if some Russian has some information, you know, let it go. I mean, Trump said, didn't he said Russia release her 30,000 emails. If you're hacking everything, give us her 30,000 emails. He was asking for that stuff.
And maybe that's what Putin has on him. Maybe Putin has the documents on the Trump campaign.
Maybe he's got some stuff. Maybe they did have some negotiations or meetings that would look really bad for Trump. It's got to be something pretty strong if he's really not going out of his way not to offend Putin.
Right.
Who knows what it is, yeah. And who knows if it's anything at all. But
that's why there are hundreds of talk shows on TV.
We do have a president who was a political rookie who probably did not know all the laws, who probably didn't care to listen to half an hour meetings telling him what you can and can't do. I mean, we know that's just not how he operates. So it is what it is. The interesting things coming out of, there's two really fascinating things to me that came out of the Cohen stuff. McClatchy was reporting that Mueller has evidence that Cohen, the president's attorney, who's now just, boy, he's all over the place, isn't he? Who paid off Stormy and was in the news tonight, negotiated another Republican to pay like $1.3 million to somebody to pay off a love child thing. That's separate from the Dorman love child story that the whole National Enquirer is involved in and the other Playboy model that the National Enquirer is involved in. Keep up, everybody. Get your pencils and scorecards ready. Justice Department special counsel has evidence that Donald Trump's personal lawyer and confidant Michael Cohen secretly made a late summer trip to Prague during the 2016 presidential campaign, according to two sources familiar with the matter. Confirmation of the trip would lend credence to a retired British spy's report that Cohen strategized there with a powerful Kremlin figure about Russia meddling in the U.S. election. So the Steele dossier is the big discredited thing. Trump, President Trump likes to spin it that was crooked Hillary paying for that, when the full truth is the RNC was paying for that at first. Once Trump got the nomination, RNC quit funding it. Democrats picked it up, said, well, hey, you got some, we'll use that now. That's fine. Bring that over to us. And they paid for it. Opposition research that all parties do against other candidates, how dirty that is or not, I don't know. But that's what's done. The Republicans were doing it against their own guy who they did not want to become the nominee. Democrats pick it up and keep paying for it. And this is the dossier that Trump was warned about when he won the presidency. They gave him a heads up like, hey, this is out there and we're trying to see if any of this is true. This is where the real salacious story about President Trump being in Moscow before he was president, having a room that President Obama allegedly stayed in, and having hookers pee all over the bed as sort of like his big middle finger up to President Obama. The strangest way to repay him in the world, but whatever. That was the story that everybody's like, come on, this is just made up hooey. And you don't want to believe it. So the whole dossier has been discredited in a lot of ways. And what's weird is this lends credence to some parts of that dossier being true, at least some parts of it. If some parts of it are true, is there then the possibility that all of it is true? Comey's coming out with this book. And in it, and I haven't read it. I don't think it's even out just yet, right? Has it come out
this
weekend
or something? Parts of it, copy of it, I think was leaked or given to New York Times, Washington Post, one of those. And then other parts of it have come out. Plus, he conducted an interview with George Stephanopoulos.
Sunday night, right?
ABC, right.
Is that going to be Sunday night?
It's Sunday night. So
how is that on Sunday night? Are they they're trying to attack 60 Minutes here? Because they don't have some Sunday night news show.
I don't know. Could be.
That's interesting that they're doing that.
Well, it'd be a slap against 60 Minutes.
Well,
we got them
it
and
sounds
you didn't.
Like that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, yeah.
That aside, one of the, so like you said, little bits of the book are dripping and mm-hmm. dropping out. And in it, one of the things that's leaked out is that President Trump wanted Comey to investigate the dossier a little bit to discredit it.
Right.
Because he said something to Comey like, Melania is freaking out about this,
right,
and I want her to know it's not true. And supposedly one of the things he said to Comey was, can you imagine me with hookers? And so that sounds like, you know, he's a famous germaphobe. Of course, this is true. Could you imagine me with hookers?
Right.
And you think, okay. But then we start hearing that he had an affair with a porn star.
Mm-hmm.
He had this other affair with the Playboy model. Who knows what else these payoffs, you know, were. So he's had these affairs. If he's had an affair with a porn star, then why wouldn't we believe that he could have been with a hooker? I mean, it's just, that doesn't mean that any of that is true, but he's discrediting himself in all these different ways. And now as we start finding out, well, that part of it maybe was true. Now, God, people are going to start wondering, my God, is there actually a P-tape out there? I'm going to hope not. And if there is, I don't want to see it. Neither do you.
No, I don't.
All right, we've got the news coming up next. We're going to check in with our listener, Wally, our world traveler. I think he's in Switzerland. We'll see if he's got some chocolate and if they're talking about Syria over there next. 720 WGN. Beppo Bala with you here, 720 WGN. We're here until 5 in the morning, at which point the morning show with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong takes to the airwaves. 312-981-7200 is the number. Right after we check the news, we'll get on with our listener, Wally, who I think is in Switzerland, our world traveler, Wally. Find out what he is up to. Of course, in the top of the hour news, Roger will have the latest update from ABC News, as you've been hearing all night long. If you're just getting up early this morning, the U.S., along with their allies, Britain and France, dropped bombs, sent missiles to strategic locations in Syria, targeted military locations, believed chemical weapons factory, things like that. We carried Theresa May's statement to the nation and some questions that she had as she faced her British constituents, and had some questions about not getting support from the government before she did it, et cetera, et cetera. She explained, you know, that working together, they believed it was in the best interest to act this way. But she also brought up that there was a chemical attack in the UK just a month ago, and that this sends an important message that that will not be tolerated. So there's that. Here in the U.S., of course, it's going to deflect attention from everything else that's going on. We'll still talk a little bit more about the other stuff that's going on in the investigation that we keep hearing about. I also still want to talk about there was a mom in a Target whose kid was eating a peanut butter sandwich, and she got blasted for that. That seemed odd to me. Okay, let's get a check of the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. If you have a smart speaker, just say, play WGN Radio on TuneIn. For in the morning, the news is sponsored by DeckTech. Here's Roger Badish. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio in the historic Tribune Tower building on Michigan Avenue. I don't know for how much longer. I think, what is today?
End of May.
Today's the end of May?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Through the end of May. We should.
Is that the
we are scheduled.
Belief?
The email said May 29th.
Is our last day here or first day there?
I think last day here. Though I'll bet you that the way they're setting it up.
A couple week transition is my guess.
Yeah, right? Most everyone will be broadcasting from over there before then.
Did you say May 29th?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a Tuesday. So theoretically, May 25th into May 26th, technically. That's Memorial Day weekend. Are you going to be gone?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Wouldn't it be cool if we were the first ones to broadcast from there?
No, I'd rather be the last one here. That's
aww,
what I'd rather like. Which I know won't happen, but I don't want to get
I would think that the switch would be like overnight weekend. Just to kind of, you know.
What would be cool is if we have a last hour here, and then we run down three blocks and start.
That's
the new
a
place.
Long run. I walked it on
is
Wednesday.
It that bad?
Huh?
Is it that bad?
It well, it's not as close as I thought it was.
Did you go to the new studios?
Yeah. I was
how
there Wednesday.
It?
It's huge. The entire floor, just kind of like remember when we were on the first floor.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge. Or do you say huge?
I don't. I'll still stay with huge.
Okay, huge. It's the entire floor. It's amazing. The studio that you will be broadcasting from
mm-hmm.
has windows that look east and north. So you will be looking out towards Navy Pier and Lake Michigan.
Okay.
At night, even though Navy Pier will be closed by that hour.
So that studio will not be on Michigan Avenue? It'll be further down? We're not looking at Michigan Avenue?
Yeah, we are legitimately on Wacker Drive.
Okay.
Now, there are windows that look west, but there are a couple of buildings in the way.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, I thought it was more like right on the corner of Michigan and Wacker, but it's a little more east.
Okay. So uphill. good views, though?
Huh?
Good views?
Beautiful views.
Okay.
And I won't have to take the elevator up and down to get pizza anymore. I will be right around the corner from you.
Jess will have to take the elevator up and down to get the pizza.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
She has some work to do to pull that one off. She's going to have to tell our buddies at Papanino's where we moved to.
Yeah. I wonder if we'll be out of their area. Just across the river.
Can you imagine? I'm sorry. That's a block too far. We're not helping you out anymore. 312-981-7200. Good and bad texts, of course, come through. 708 says, who really cares who Trump slept with? It was before he was president. Clinton and Kennedy had other women while in office, and I'm sure there were other cheating presidents. They still did their job. Well, Kennedy got away with a time in which that just wasn't talked about. Clinton did not, as I recall. You remember the impeachment hearings and things like that. But you could argue back then, who cares? That was his personal life, whatever, whatever. Although that was in the Oval Office, literally. So there was that. And with President Trump, I don't think we really care that much or surprised that much. I mean, the man is on his third marriage. However, it's the payments that are more of a concern or more interesting, to say the least. And
not
just in a salacious viewpoint, but also whether that was illegal in some way.
Right. I was about to say, it's not necessarily the payments. It is where the money came from, how the money was given, and under what circumstances. I think that has to do with the legalities of all that.
And then I have my friend from 630. Matt, your delivery sounds like Rachel Maddow. Is that where you get your news? I hope you only play a liberal pinhead on the radio, but I doubt that's the case. Of course you get your news from Mad Dog Maddo, because she brought up Wag the Dog.
Wag the Dog was brought up last night on Patty Vasquez's office program.
And I've
it was brought up last week on someone else's program.
Let me say this about Rachel Maddow. I love Rachel Maddow. Mm-hmm. I don't watch her as a news source. I watch her as entertainment. Rachel Maddow and MSNBC, I'm sorry, are the left's equivalent of Fox News. It is not equal by any means, because Fox News just is just a fantasy unto itself. It's hilarious and amazing the way they report things and the way they ignore certain things. I guarantee you MSNBC covered the snot out of Al Franken's sexual assault thing. They didn't ignore it, I'm quite sure. Fox ignores, like, you know, if something's going on bad for Trump, turn to Fox and they're talking about Hillary in her emails or something like that. It's pretty amusing what they do. So I will say that. But I agree that Rachel Maddow and MSNBC are not my first choice to go for news. For entertainment, sure. For that slant on things, yes. That's where you would go. But the Wag the Dog thing does not make sense in this instance, because so with Clinton, it was Kosovo. God, have we said Kosovo since Clinton?
I'm sure it's been said a few times.
Not much, though.
Not like to the point where you and I would remember.
No. That was very different situation, right? I mean, here we have Britain and France teaming up with us, and it's been something we've been dealing with, as Sheer al-Bassad, for a long time and not getting anywhere with.
Yeah, did it a year ago.
So there's no way to equate that to a Wag the Dog situation, I don't think. So, to you.
Oh, did you have to do that?
I did have to do that. 312-981-7200. All right, if Wally's paying long distance for this call, we're in trouble. He's going to bill us for this. Wally, good morning.
Hey, Matt, good morning to you. How are you?
Good, buddy. How are you? Where are you at?
I'm in Schaffhausen, Switzerland, so I'm about 45 minutes north of Zurich. It's the extreme northern edge of Switzerland on the German border.
So what is the weather like in Switzerland right now?
It's actually beautiful. Right now we're at about 11 Celsius, about 56 Fahrenheit, and we're going to get up to about 65 today.
That is a million times better than it is at home. You are not missing out, let me tell you.
I've been listening. The weather, it's crazy with the games being canceled and people bundling up and having to dress like Eskimos to go to a Cubs game in April.
Yeah, it's not fun here right now. So, Wally, you are a world traveler for work. You're always on the road. Tell us this current trip you're on. I want to say Jess was telling me it's like an 8 or 10 day trip, right?
No. I will be here in Switzerland for in 2 months. I'll be home probably about 4 or 5 days.
Oh my gosh.
It's a long trip. This one right here is 3 weeks, but I was in town for 2 days for a wedding last weekend, but I was here the 2 weeks before that, and I'll be here till at least the middle of May.
Holy cow. That's quite some time away from home, Wally. Okay, so tell me a little bit about Switzerland and the state of the world right now with what we've got going on with the Syrian strike. I don't know how much you've been tuning into local media or had the TV on today, but is this being paid attention too much over there?
So it's interesting. It is being covered, but all the news here is in German. Being in the northern part of Switzerland, everything here is German. So, but it's on BBC, but that's the same BBC that you're going to be seeing, or anything like that. Bloomberg Europe, things like that. So it's getting the same kind of coverage. As far as the locals here, I haven't been out too much yet, even this morning. I'm 7 hours ahead of Chicago, but they're kind of content in their own world, and there's not much that's bothering them from the outside world. Although I was telling Jess, I was on the train. I had to be in Zurich on Wednesday, and I was coming back, and some guys sat down with me, and we started talking, and these guys were loud and talking America, and they were asking about Trump, and I got off the train. And about an 80-year-old guy got off the train at the same stop, and he was walking with me, and he said, "You are American." I said, "Yes." He said, "What do you think about Trump?" And I've been asked that question enough in travels to know that you don't answer it. You ask a question right back to them, what they think about Trump. And his comment was, "He seems like a wild man, but hopefully he will do good for the world," was this guy's comment. So I thought, okay, that's good. And I said, we kind of think the same thing in the States. There's a lot of crazy things he's doing, but hopefully he's going to have a positive effect on what's happening in the world. But that was this old guy's comment.
Is that what you're finding from most people? I mean, as people ask you that during your travels and you've learned to deflect it back to them, what are most people saying about our president?
Yeah, the first thing they say is a variation of, "He's a wild man. He's crazy. He doesn't know what he's doing." But then there usually is that caveat of, "But he is taking action, or he is doing things that may help." But the first thing out, because that's what everybody hears, right? Whether it's a scandal, much as you guys have been talking about just recently, it's a scandal this or a scandal that. But I think the world's been trying to deal with Syria for a while, and President Obama's famous line in the sand, but then no consequences whatsoever.
Yeah.
And Trump, interestingly, I think he said, whether it was yesterday or Thursday, "Hey, Putin, the bombs are coming." Or maybe it was Assad. I'm not sure who he said it to. "Hey, the bombs are coming." And sure enough, they happened.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. They did. All right. So how many weeks till you're back in the States?
I'll be back end of April, 27, 28.
Wow.
And I'm back here.
And so you're working there most of the time, but what are you doing for fun? What are you going to get to see on this trip or experience that we just don't get over here?
Actually, this weekend I was going to go to Budapest, but one of my colleagues who lives in Budapest said, "Wally, don't come this weekend because they just had elections there recently." And my understanding is the conservatives won and the communists are planning civil unrest this weekend in Budapest, so you may want to watch. I haven't heard anything yet of anything going on, but demonstrations at a minimum. And so her comment was, don't come to Budapest this weekend. It will not be good.
The communists are planning civil unrest.
Yeah, there's a communist party in Budapest, absolutely. And they lost the elections, or didn't win in as many seats. It wasn't a win for them, and so they're planning to... civil unrest, I think, is what they're saying this weekend.
Interesting. So what will you do instead?
Today I'm probably just going to ride the trains in Switzerland, get a day pass and just ride around a little bit. Like I say, it's a very nice day, and I don't have anything planned. So,
Wally, you're leading the life, my friend, except for these plane flights and, I guess, the work that goes along with it. But it's cool that you're getting to see the world like this. Sometime when you're back, you're going to have to come in so we can chat, and you're going to have to bring photos from your travels around the world. Maybe we could do a little online slideshow at WGNradio.com of Wally's. I mean, where in the world is Wally, I guess, is something we certainly could be playing, couldn't we?
We could absolutely do that, Matt. We absolutely could do that. Yeah, well, I guess now we'll have to come to the new studios, it sounds like, right?
Sounds like you won't be back before we're out of here.
Right, probably not.
All right, Wally, safe travels. Yeah. We'll check in with you again in a few weeks, okay?
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Love listening to WGN and keeping in touch with Chicago and the current status of the world. So
we appreciate you doing
good work. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate you doing so and being a loyal listener and checking in from wherever you are around the world. Glenn has a comment on the move we're going to make pretty soon. Hey, Glenn, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing?
We are good, sir.
Hey, I've been listening over the past, just to change things up a little bit lighter. You guys are moving.
We are.
Is there any ideas as to what you guys are going to be bringing over from the old station? You know, do like a Ryman Auditorium thing and bring some old stuff over from that station to the new station? Momentum, stuff like that.
I don't know. I'd have to ask Marlene Wells. I mean, I imagine, you know, they just built these seventh floor studios that we have 5 or 6 years ago when we moved out of the first floor where we had been since 1986. All we currently have on the first floor of the Tribune Tower now is our showcase studio and like three offices in this hallway. We used to occupy... when I was here producing John's show, I think from 1986 until about, about 2013, we had the entire first floor. And now there's a restaurant called Howells and Hood, and that occupies all of our old offices where we had sales, we had additional studios, all sorts of stuff. And so about 5 years ago, we built these seventh floor studios, so there was a ton of new equipment bought then that's probably still good. So I imagine a lot of that is going with, and I think that a lot of the clearing out of mementos and things like that was done when we cleared out of the first floor and moved up to seventh floor.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that, you know, taking stuff from the old studio and bringing that up. You know, things snuck in or something like that. Just curious, you know, for personal momentums and stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that Steve Bertrand sent me a text earlier this week. Marlene must have been cleaning out something because we used to have a Christmas tree when I was producer here years ago. We'd have a Christmas tree up every year in like the conference room, and Marlene would hang ornaments with each of our pictures on them. So there was a picture of me from about 1997 on this ornament that Bertrand sent me a text of, which made me laugh. And then Bertrand sent me his old publicity photo, which made me laugh even harder. The tie that Steve Bertrand had on in his publicity photo from probably 1994 is amazing to think he actually chose it. Clearly before he was married and there was somebody giving him good advice.
That's funny. I'm just curious. Just to change things up to the lighter tone.
If we have a garage sale, we'll let you know, Glenn.
Oh yeah, I'll get right on that one. I got a semi. I'll just back
there you
up
go.
My trailer.
There you go.
All right. Have yourself a nice weekend.
You too. Thanks for checking in, Glenn. 312-981-7200. You know, when we had this huge first floor whole spread here, we had a record room that literally ended up having CDs too. But we had about, I think, and Jess, this is before your time, but we had like 30,000 albums. We had this room that was bigger here than the showcase studio, and it had shelves that were about 8 feet long and about 8 feet high. So it had about 5 or 6 shelves on it. And there were like 6 of those. And then you had a crank that moved them in the room. They were like on rollers, so they could all be pressed together, but then you could crank and move one out so you could walk in between them. And we had 30,000 albums from over the years, like all, because GN played records for a long, long time before it went all talk. And then we had CDs and all sorts of stuff, and they got rid of that all when we moved out of these studios. Very sad. But it will be neat to see our new studios. Life goes on. Things change. Rah, 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 rah. It will be sad, though, to leave the Tribune Tower. And the Tribune itself got some good news today. They are being sold. We'll tell you about that after we check the news, which is next on 720 WGN. Wow. Pepa Bala with you here, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200 is the number. Hey, by the way, all of you that are so worried about, well, President Trump did this, or there's an attack on this, or it's going to rain at the Cubs game, kids aren't out of school, there's a big project due, you might not have to worry about it. I owe a bunch of money on taxes. The end of the world may be near if a Christian numerologist is to be believed, Roger.
Really?
Is the rapture finally here?
Well, it's been predicted within the past year a couple of times.
It seems to get predicted pretty often.
More
so
lately.
I guess you only have to be right once.
More so lately, though. Yeah.
David Mead tells the UK's Daily Express newspaper that on April 23rd, the sun and moon will be in Virgo, as will Jupiter, which represents the Messiah. For a certain branch of evangelical Christianity, Revelation 12:1-2 describes the beginning of what is known as the rapture and the second coming of Christ. The passage reads, "And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was pregnant and was crying out in birth pains and the agony of giving birth." In the passage, the woman is represented as Virgo. According to me, the alignment represents the lion of the tribe of Judah. Marking the rapture, the belief that Christ will bring the faithful into paradise prior to a period of tribulation on earth that precedes the end of time. Mead said he believes the so-called planet X, which is also known as Nibiru, will appear above the sky on the April date, causing volcanic eruptions, tsunamis, and earthquakes. NASA repeatedly has said planet X is a hoax. Speaking to the Express, Mead described it as a unique, once-in-a-century sign, exactly as depicted in the 12th chapter of Revelation. This is our time marker.
Well,
what is April 23rd?
I don't know.
Oh, that's not far away, Raj. That's
at least let us move into the new place first. That's all I'm saying. We got to go to the...
Well, we've only got next weekend.
I got to do this. Hmm. We got an update coming up here.
Oh, go ahead.
Yep, we got an update coming up on the latest from ABC News.
Got about 24 minutes left. How did you do that? TikTok, what? Tell me, Jess. Talk in my ear here. Come on. What did you just do there? TikTok on the clock. Jess is always trying to work something good into those bumps. Thank you very much, Jess. We're here for 24 more minutes till Orion takes over with the morning show at 312-981-7200 here on 720 WGN. Texter says, hey, Matt, let's lighten it up. Did Roger really ever work with the great Art Bell?
We worked at the same radio station. He worked overnights. Mm-hmm. I worked mornings till about noon. And then since I was a one-man news operation, I worked, I recorded some afternoon newscasts, except when there would be some events going on, like the month that I left, right before I left, there was a 48-hour jail hostage siege. Three guys in the Las Vegas Metro Jail took a couple of guards hostage.
Mm-hmm.
And so I covered that for not only KDON, but also for the Associated Press.
So at the time you were there, was Art Bell already coast-to-coast Art Bell, nationally known, 500 stations?
I don't know if it was coast-to-coast yet. It might have been a regional thing, or it might have just started the national syndication, so he didn't have a lot of stations. But driving in, I would be listening to him.
And was he doing all the paranormal stuff then already?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was
yeah.
his thing, right?
That was his thing.
Was because the show was like 5 hours overnight,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Was it all paranormal? Because that's all you read about is Art Bell and this paranormal stuff he did. Is that all he did?
I was asleep for most of it.
Right. You heard him, was it always something about?
Yeah.
5 hours every night.
It was very laid back, and he'd have callers calling in from all over the country. Yeah. I started there in January of 79. I worked there through September of 79, well, beginning of September of 79, before we moved back here. So, it was, KDON had a wide variety of programs on the air. Now it's almost all syndicated stuff.
Yeah, well, most of
and they've moved,
like
I think,
are.
Now. It used to be at number one Main Street, Union Plaza Hotel. We would look out from our studios over the swimming pool, which was on the overhang of the front entrance.
Mm-hmm.
It was a round swimming pool. And I remember always going down during a break after my morning news. I'd go downstairs to the casino and get my buttermilk pastry and some coffee, and then go play some pinball machines.
Before you go back for your next newscast?
Before I go back upstairs.
What if there was breaking news?
Well.
And now to Roger.
We didn't have that type of a show. So. It was music.
Nothing was breaking.
Music. We played music in the morning. Rock and roll, baby.
Rock and roll, baby.
Yeah.
All right, so I mentioned this earlier. I wanted to get to this before we got out of here.
Uh-huh.
San Francisco's SF Gate reports that a mother was surprised to find herself scolded by a fellow shopper during a trip to Target. According to the mom's post on the Urban Baby Parenting blog, the woman was upset that her daughter was enjoying a PB&J while perched in one of the store's shopping carts. The woman lectured her about how the sandwich could pose a threat to someone with a peanut allergy. She posted this online.
Wait a minute.
So a woman is shopping in Target.
Yeah.
She's got a little child with her.
Uh-huh.
And as eating the parents PB&J. Often do, is they give their kids a snack while they're doing the shopping.
Sure.
Keep them entertained. Give them something to do. And so the child's eating a PB&J. And another shopper says, how could you do that? There are kids with peanut allergies. How can you have her eating a peanut butter and jelly in the store like that?
But what's the kid smearing it on stuff?
Some people are deathly allergic.
Really,
peanuts.
That close? Like, someone could walk near it? And
I have a nephew who developed peanut allergy, and he, just in the last year, was at a friend's house. They had a big plate of cookies. He took a chocolate chip cookie and ate the chocolate chip cookie. Didn't have peanuts in it.
Oh.
But it was on a plate with some peanut butter cookies.
Oh.
And because it was touched or was near this peanut butter cookie, he ended up in the hospital.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So some people have these crazy allergies.
Wow.
My nephew Thomas, nor his mother, would ever yell at somebody in a Target because they were around peanuts. The crazy thing is, and I know I don't go to Target that often, they have in many Targets a whole shopping area where they probably have peanuts.
Yeah, there's food over on one side of the store.
I know
now.
You can say, that's food in a jar. But I've been in stores where peanuts are like kind of open, and maybe they don't have them where you shovel them into a bag anymore. Probably not. But
No. They're all in bags or containers or whatever. They're all sealed. But still, it's in one aisle. You know what? In Whole Foods, you can scoop them out.
The peanuts?
Yeah, they have a whole section of legumes and nuts and other things where you can, it's a plastic container with a lid on it. You stick your little scoop in there, you put it in a bag, and you write the number of the item on the tag, and boom,
In bulk. I'm stunned by people's willingness to tell other people how to live their lives. Now, I understand if you know somebody who's deathly allergic to peanuts, you want to protect them as much as possible.
True.
But a child in a store having a sandwich is not somebody, putting everybody's lives in danger. I don't feel.
And so the lady,
I have a daughter who's got a peanut allergy. I have this nephew and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So a woman came up to her and yelled at her, basically, that she's letting her daughter eat peanut butter in this store when there's kids with severe peanut allergies.
But the woman who did the chastising, it doesn't say that she had a child with her?
She didn't.
It doesn't say.
The report, it's not like, hey, my daughter right here is allergic.
Blah, blah, blah.
It was just, hey, kids have peanut allergies. How could you have her walking around doing that?
Well, she's trying to be conscientious.
She's trying to just tell people what to do.
Oh, okay.
That's my take on that.
All right.
I'm sorry, I have children with peanut allergies. Not that severe,
right. But
enough. Mm-hmm. And I would never yell at somebody about that. Now, I have been at the Cubs game, or maybe John and I talked about this years ago on John's show. If you bring you go to a Cubs game, there's no, although I think some fields have allergy free sections, stuff like that. But, you go get your tickets to the Cubs game, you want to take your kid, and then somebody in front of you has peanuts in the shell.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I've heard of people saying, would you mind that? And then people get come on, I can't have my peanuts.
Right.
That's a tougher situation. You're stuck there. At the Target, you could just walk away from that person and not be near them. In a confined space like Wrigley Field, where you want to take your kids.
And there's peanut shells all over the place.
And if I was there and somebody behind me said, hey, I'm sorry, my kid has peanut allergies, would you mind? Mm-hmm. I'd say, that's not a problem. We won't eat them. That's fine.
Right.
We'll get nachos. Whatever. let's have human kindness towards each other. That kid should be able to go to a Cubs game. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want that child never to be able to go to Wrigley Field because they have peanut allergies. That would right. suck. So I would absolutely do that and have no problem doing that for them. When the woman posted it online saying, can you believe these people yelled at me? She gets yelled at by a bunch of other people online. Some because of the allergy thing.
Right.
And then some because how could you have your kid eating food in that disgusting Target cart?
Oh, maybe she swabbed it down.
Maybe she did.
Beforehand.
But it's like, oh, God, people, let's eat some dirt. Expose yourself. I know you probably don't want your kid's hands touching that and then going in their mouth, but your kid's sitting in that cart, their hand is going to be on there and then go in their mouth anyways, whether they have peanut butter or not. So either you're wiping
wipes.
Down the cart or you're not.
Yeah, she's got wipes
and
where she's wiping the kid's
hands. And most stores now have wipes when you walk in
yeah.
a little dispenser.
That's right.
So, oh my God, people, lighten up. Back off.
And it's almost, I'm almost afraid to go out of the house.
Comment sections are the worst thing in the world.
Comment sections?
You shouldn't have comments on websites, on stories.
Oh, yeah.
Just disable the comments.
Yeah.
Whenever we're looking at a product or something, Colleen will start reading the comments. And I'll say, why are you reading
the
comments? And she'll do it like about a product or things like that. Well, I'm like, oh, God, who knows who these people are? They could all be crazy.
And they could all be paid for, too. Like, if all the comments are great, you don't know.
New Shoreham, Rhode Island. Town council voted unanimously this week to ban balloons. New law prohibits the sale and use of balloons throughout the town, which comprises the area of Block Island off of Rhode Island's coast. Why?
What's wrong with balloons?
We are very concerned about the environment. There's a lot of information out there of damages that balloons do to the wildlife. Wildlife isn't the only concern. Environmental organizations often point out that balloons can land in the ocean, eventually washing up on shore and polluting the environment. Balloons Blow, a nonprofit organization dedicated to warning the public of the dangers of balloons. I think they should retitle because it's hard to say balloons blow and not laugh. And then, therefore, they're not taking it seriously. Offers environmentally friendly alternatives to balloons on their website.
What? Blowing up a plastic bag? Does that mean no rubber gloves?
Well, you need those for hospitals and stuff like that.
They're latex. I don't know. Is that considered rubber?
I'm sure if that ends up in the ocean, that's not good either.
Yeah. Why don't you just ban everything that could end up in the ocean?
Balloons. I'm at balloonsblow.org.
Yeah.
Careful when searching that. Balloons are not the only thing to decorate with. There are many safe, fun, and eye-catching alternatives to balloons for parties, memorials, fundraisers, and more. Many can be made at home and are great activities for kids. As we become more aware of our personal impacts on the environment, people are ditching single-use wasteful products for earth-friendly, reusable, and exciting alternatives. Okay, well, tell us what the alternative... Oh, yeah. Where are the alternatives?
Did they say it? Is there a non-balloon balloon?
Here. Here's their eco-friendly alternatives. Nobody's going to like any of these.
Oh, really?
Sky lanterns, although those are really fun.
What are sky lanterns? Oh,
you know
where
you light
and
that thing
goes
and it floats
up in the sky?
Off?
Yeah.
Although
they're like
funny.
Paper bags, aren't they?
This is hilarious. Environmentally friendly alternatives. There are many alternatives to balloon releases. To avoid unintentionally littering with balloons, you can instead have fun, celebrate, and remember with environmentally friendly alternatives. Let your imagination soar, and who knows what creative one-of-a-kind idea you might come up with. Then they list unsustainable alternatives. Sky lanterns are not an environmentally friendly alternative. Leaving a fire unattended is against fire code. Sky lanterns have started huge fires, caused serious burns, and have killed animals. They're not telling me what to do!
So I can't do my sky lantern?
Here are some ideas to get you started. Plant in remembrance. A great way to honor and remember a loved one or an important issue is to bring more life to our planet. Okay. That sounds very nice. Can I say boring?
I've got a 3-year-old.
I'm sorry, we're not doing
balloons.
We're going to plant a plant.
Yeah.
No.
And when you're 25, you'll see it fully grown.
This is teaching you patience.
Yes.
Flags, banners, streamers, and dancing inflatables. Many businesses are realizing the benefits of using reusable eye-catching signage. Colorful streamers, flags, and banners save money and time over balloons, ribbons, and helium. Okay, that's fine. I do love those dancing guys.
Oh, with the air inside of them?
Yeah.
And they're flapping around?
Those things are fun. Ribbon dancers. Instead of giving kids and guests balloons at parties or events, why not give them something a little more engaging? Balloons will simply sit tied up or be gone in a flash if released. Ribbon dancers are beautiful and require people to move around and have fun. So it's like, I think we see that in the Olympics with one of the gymnastics things. Uh-huh. Remember they run with those things?
You know, those can be dangerous, though.
Why?
Well, you get them wrapped around your neck. You never know.
Okay. Kites and garden spinners. Garden spinners like you used to, we used to get when our kids were blowing that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but kites?
Yeah.
Now, what, those get blown away. Now you got.
They could. And the garden spinners.
Are they biodegradable?
The garden spinners, I imagine you throw in the garbage and, you know, things go.
Well, no, you keep them in the garden.
Eventually throw them away. Bunting, pinwheels. Pinwheels is what I was thinking of. Tissue paper pompons. Drumming. floating flowers, wildflower seed bombs. Great way to give a gift that grows by making your own flower seed bombs.
Hmm.
Jump rope for a cause. Whoo!
Now, what I'm saying, though, is you got a 2 or 3 year old kid who loves balloons. And what are clowns going to do? They can't sell balloons anymore at the county fair.
You know what it is? I think you're right. I think this is like a deep state thing to get rid of clowns.
I think so. And remember, they're getting rid of the circus.
The makeup industry is not going to be happy.
Yeah.
We just got in the mail. So Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey closed down their circus.
Right.
There are other circuses out there.
Yeah.
There's a circus coming to the Sears Center right by my house in Hoffman Estates. It's like, you know, an off-brand circus, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent me a mailer with 50 tickets.
Whoa.
So if an adult buys a ticket, a kid gets in free. And we're looking at them like, what, are we supposed to paper the neighborhood with these things?
Yeah, right.
Who do we know that we're giving these out to? And they weren't going to have elephants, but they got like dogs and lions and tigers and stuff. I was thinking, boy, I've never been to a third, you know, I don't know the circus, so I don't mean to say bad about it.
Well, I know
it,
there's Universal, S-O-U-L, circus comes to town every year. That's a pretty cool circus.
This was not that.
That was, oh, okay.
This was some sort of, I don't know what, traveling circus.
You know, I miss the Shriner Circus.
They don't do it anymore?
At Medina Temple.
Do they not do it anymore?
Well, there's no more to Medina Temple. They sold that and turned it into a nightclub and stores. Decades ago.
Well, is that where the Bloomingdale's is?
Yeah.
That's a nice building.
Yeah. There used to be a circus, and that's where the...
They had the circus there?
Yeah. That's where the anniversary show of Bozo Circus was. That big one that that they videotaped?
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
That was a circus.
Well, that's wonderful.
I mean, that's where they held it. It used to be the Medina Shrine Temple. So, you know, all the Shriners that are out in parades and stuff like that.
Fun,
yeah, this was their location for their circus.
312-981-7200. We've got Orion checking in a few minutes here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Matt Bobala with you. We'll get it to news and Orion in just a minute with the morning show. We'll be back next weekend. You can follow us on Twitter at Matt Bobala and on Facebook at The Matt Bobala Show. Give us a like there. 815 texts, I was on a plane trip and a mom asked us not to eat the peanuts by her daughter. So no problem. We all ate pretzels. See, we can all just be nice to each other. We can all just get along. It's not that hard, people.
No.
There's always pretzels when you can't have the peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
Not always as delicious,
pizza,
but you got your pizza. Be happy.
Yes, I did.
312-981-7200 is the number. Of course, Roger will have an update on the latest on the Syrian airstrikes at the top of the hour news, which is coming up next. Sunday morning rain will be falling. We're just a day early. Thank you for hanging out with us this morning, people. We appreciate it. We'll be back with you next weekend here on the Matt Bobala Show on 720 WGN. I'll close with some good news. The Chicago Tribune's parent company, Tronc, has got a new owner. Michael Farrow, who, if you're not following the media closely, you probably haven't really heard of, was the owner, the majority stakeholder, at least, in what used to be known as Tribune Publishing. So about 3, 4, 5 years ago, Tribune split into two companies, Tribune Broadcasting, Tribune Publishing, which was an unfair deal to publishing because the TV stations and the real estate holdings all stayed with Tribune Media, which was TV, us, and the properties. And then Tribune Publishing, all the newspapers that were having trouble making money, went separately. Farrow, who owned the Sun-Times for a short amount of time, he was a technology entrepreneur guy, then bought up enough of the Tribune to take control of it. Changed the name of Tribune Publishing to Tronk, which I think is Tribune Online Content. I don't know what the hell it was supposed to be. It was stupid. Hopefully, they will go back to Tribune Publishing. He's selling his share to a distant relative of Colonel McCormick, who the McCormick family ran the Tribune for years. The name of the McCormick is Sergeant McCormick. So we've gone from Colonel McCormick to Sergeant McCormick. But the Tribune newspaper hopefully will be under some better leadership. And, you know, I don't know if a return to the heady days is ever going to happen in publishing or for newspapers, but good leadership is more important than ever. And Farrow resigned not long ago as chairman because of allegations that came forward, and now he's sold completely out. All right, we're going to get to the news because Roger's got an update to do. We will see you all next weekend. Thank you for being with us as always.